Jean.
Asaha. He, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the deities. Satvam, living being. Enam, that. Parittaha, all around. Vipashyan, looking. Stambhasya, of the pillar. Madhyat, from the mist. Anunirjihanam, having come out. Not. I am this. Mrigaha, animal. Not. Api, indeed. Naraha, human being. Vichitram, very wonderful. Aho, alas. Kim, what? Etat, this. Nrimriga indrarupa, the form of both a man and the king of beasts, the lion. So translation. While Hiranyakashipu looked all around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either a man or a lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakashipu wondered, what is this creature that is half man and half lion? So you can repeat. While Hiranyakashipu looked all around, to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either a man or a lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakashipu wondered, what is this creature that is half man and half lion? So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A demon cannot calculate the unlimited potency of the Supreme Lord. As stated in the Vedas, Parasya Shaktir Vividayava Shuyate Svabhava Ki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. The different potencies of the Lord are always working as an automatic exhibition of His knowledge. I stress that word. For a demon, it is certainly wonderful that the form of a lion and the form of a man can be united, since a demon has no experience of the inconceivable power for which the Supreme Lord is called all-powerful. Demons cannot understand the omnipotence of the Lord. They simply compare the Lord to one of them, Avajananti, Mam, Mudha, Manushim, Tanam, Ashvatam. Mudha's rascals think that Krishna is an ordinary human being who appears for the benefit of other human beings. Param Bhavam, Ajanata, fools, rascals, and demons, cannot realize the supreme potency of the Lord. But He can do anything and everything. Indeed, He can do whatever He likes. When Hiranyakashipu received benedictions from Lord Brahma, he thought that he was safe. Since he received the benediction, that he would not be killed either by an animal or by a human being. He never thought that an animal and human being would be combined, so that demons like him would be puzzled by such a form. This is the meaning of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipotence. So, Sattvamenam Barito Vipashyan Stambhashamadhyan Nirjihanam Mayam Rigo Napi Naro Vichitram Aho Kim Etanre Mrigendra Rupam. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shalakeya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So in this light of the Lord's omnipotence, I was listening to a class where Prabhupada was talking to someone who was worshipping, Guru Maharaji. I don't know if any of you remember this particular individual, but he was a young man who later on had some spiritual trouble. And the person Prabhupada was talking to was his devotee. His follower, let's say, rather than use the word devotee in that particular context. And so he was insisting, there were two things, that Prabhupada was talking about how God was the Supreme Father and everything came from him. And so there were two things that happened in this particular discourse. One is that he said, God is this young boy, Guru Maharaj. And Prabhupada said, how can he be the father? And then another thing, then he later on revealed the real philosophy that they had, which is that God is basically just energy. And then Prabhupada said, how can something that's simply energy be a father? And the devotees in that particular class were actually arguing on behalf of Srila Prabhupada with the person, telling him, without a person, how can you have a father, and how can the father have a son? And Jesus Christ says in the Bible that, my Father who art in heaven. He doesn't say my energy who art in heaven. So this person said, no, but God can't be a person. Here's this point. He can't be a person because a person is limited. And then Prabhupada responded, as he usually does in such cases, that if you say God cannot be a person, you're limiting him. So there's another point. They're limiting God. And Prabhupada said, of course, this is our philosophy, that God has both a personal and an impersonal. I think it's loud enough. I don't think we need to make it louder than this. So God, I think you made it too loud. I think you're blasting me to pieces. So God has both a personal and impersonal aspect. That's what it means to be God is unlimited. So there was an interesting conversation. In other words, we in the Krishna consciousness movement have the most faith in the existence of God. In other societies, I found that they tend to limit God. In other words, one of my favorite quotes is from that Harvey Cushman, which sounds like Hare Krishna, where he wrote this book about why bad things happen to good people, and I hope it's loud enough. If it's not loud enough for everybody, that means people have ear damage.
No, it's just a little bit of work. You can't hear in the kitchen.
Oh, in the kitchen. Okay. So, too loud for me. So anyway, so you must have separate volume controls for the different speakers, I hope.
No.
So in other words, I got to be blasted out by my own sound just so that other people can hear. So, in other words, what he was presenting, of course, was that God is well-meaning, prime mover, and basically, he's not all-powerful. But we actually have a complete conception of God. He's all-powerful and all-beautiful. They don't even think about the beauty of God, most Christians, isn't it? The beauty of God. Like Prabhupada sometimes say, if you have another candidate for God, present him, bring him forward, and see if he's more attractive than Krishna. And they haven't been able to do that yet. Even the most attractive woman, Of course, some religions, they worship a woman as God. So anyway, if you look at the qualities of Bhagavan, you know, and here we're talking about the power, potency, and there's also the intelligence, there's also renunciation, there's the beauty, etc., and there's the knowledge. Anyway, so there's all these different qualities of Bhagavan. We, in the Krishna Conscious Movement, have the complete conception of God. In other words, we're not taking anything away or neglecting to mention that God has all these qualities. And, as Prabhupada said, because he has all these qualities, he can do anything he wants, at any time he wants, with anyone he wants. And in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is mentioned as swarat. Swarat means he's absolutely independent, because unless one has the full power, full knowledge, full beauty and everything, you can't be completely independent. If you have less than the full power, you're not independent. In other words, you're dependent on something else. In other words, you're not God. For example, you have this Mayavadi conception, impersonalist conception, that basically God became put into Maya by the illusory energy. So in other words, that's one of the problems with the Brahmavadi or the Mayavadi conception, is that you have God coming down to this earth and somehow or other, you know, I'm God, you're God, or whatever, or at least Satya Sai Baba is God, or at least, anyway, someone is God. Everybody. Actually, Prabhupada would say in the 1960s and 70s, Prabhupada would say so many gods are coming from India. Practically every week there's another god. So, in other words, God fell into illusion. So then you're saying that illusion is more powerful than God. So in other words, illusion is God. So, you know, if I'm God, why am I an illusion? Because illusion is more powerful. Illusion must be God. But we know that Maya or Durga is the shadow potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vibhard. Chaya eva vibharti Durga, as mentioned in the Brahma Samhita. She's the shadow of the Supreme Person. And sometimes in the Bhagavatam it describes as the backside of the Lord. When you're talking about the universal form, he's the backside of the Lord. The illusory energy of the Lord. So, but everything is under the Lord's direction. As Prabhupada quotes here in this verse, Purasha Shaktir Vividaya Shrute Svabhavaki Gyana Balakriya Cha. And the translation is, the Lord has multifarious potencies. And of course, the Lord's potencies are defined in three different categories. Vishnu Shakti Para Pukta Chitragyakya Tata Para Vidyakarma Sanganya Tratira Shakti Ishate. That means material potency, para prakriti. I mean, it's spiritual potency, sorry. Para prakriti. Vishnu Shakti, para prakta. Kshetra Gyakya Tata para. That's the jiva souls, the knower of the kshetra. Tata para, which are also transcendental or spiritual. And then Avidyakarma Sanganya, potency of illusion, which is called avidya karma. Avidya karma means ignorant actions. Sangyanya means they are known as. Chatir Shakti Shate. These are the three potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these potencies, getting back to the point about the Lord being Swarat, that first of all, the Lord doesn't even need the potency. He manifests the potency. The potencies come from him. Om Purnam Adav Purnamidam. And the potencies themselves, which come from Krishna, and Krishna is not dependent on the potencies, they're all first-class servants of the Supreme Lord. So in other words, they do whatever Krishna wants without him asking the potencies to do anything. That's what a first-class servant means. And I mentioned before, many times, according to what Prabhupada describes as different servants, a first-class servant is one who does what the master wants without being asked. Second-class servant does what the master wants when he's asked and does it gladly. Third-class servant does it too, but does it with a grudging attitude, nasty attitude. And a tenth-class servant doesn't do it. So we should try to be at least second-class servants. And if not, then we're in trouble. Because bhakti yoga is actually executed with the subtle body. So if you're doing this service in a grudging mood, why do I have to do this? Ay-yi-yi. What, little Bengali there. But then that's not actually devotional service. Devotional service is executed with the subtle body, gladly, joyfully performed. I mean, that's a challenge sometimes. When we're asked to execute certain austerities, how do we do it joyfully? How do we at least become to the platform of second-class servants? Well, we do it joyfully by thinking that my whole life, manasa deha geha yokishmo, is meant for pleasing you, Krishna. If we ever forget this, and we're just doing our devotional service ritualistically or angrily or feeling resentful, then in one sense it's not really devotional service. I mean, it may be some benefit, you know, but the real benefit comes when we're doing things joyfully. Krishna said, joyfully performed. That doesn't mean we wait for the joy. They say, it's not joyful. But we actually think of doing our service in a loving way. Just like someone who is working for his family, whom he or she loves, they may be executing so many austerities, but if they do it in a loving way, if they actually love them. And they're always reminded, just like we have this sadhana, which reminds us of what we're doing, who we're doing it for, why we're doing it. And, you know, you just look, for example, sometimes I just look at a picture of Prabhupada and just think, you know, for you I'm doing this. And that inspires me. Because if I just look at the external things, you know, waking up early in the morning, trudging through the snow, like the mailman, you know, rain, sleet, and snow, no one will deter the faithful, I'm just paraphrasing, the faithful mailman, U.S. mailman in the service, then it's just like, huh? But we should be continually reminded of the person who we're doing. So I look at a picture of Prabhupada and I get inspired. Even if there's just nobody in the temple but me. It happens. It's happened. Especially when there's snow. It's inspiring. I look at the deities. Wow, I'm your servant. Thank you. And there's a whole mood of thankfulness, gratitude, like that. And then it becomes very inspiring. And then you come to the platform of second-class servant, at least. We don't want to be on the platform of third-class servant, just doing our service resentfully. So anyway, getting back to the point, a little message from the sponsors. So we should be at least second-class servants, and all of Krishna's energies are first-class servants, except for some of the jiva souls. So the potencies like the Maya Shakti, she's called Vaishnavi, and of course what to speak of the internal potency of the Lord. So Krishna just desires things and things happen. So Krishna does amazing things, inconceivable things, and that's God. And so Prabhupada tells some stories in this regard. I mean, I think you're all familiar with the Brahman, so-called Brahman, who didn't believe that God was inconceivable and could do anything, and that's the famous story of Narada Muni, which bears repeating in this particular context, that Narada Muni, he was going to see a Brahmin and a cobbler, and both of them knew that he was going to see Vishnu after he saw them. So they both asked him the same question, you know, when am I going back to Godhead? When am I getting liberated? And they asked Narada Muni to ask that question of Lord Vishnu. So Narada Muni went and he asked the question of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu said, the Brahman, you know, many births. And as far as the cobbler, back to Godhead almost immediately. And so Narada Muni proceeded to talk to the Brahman, and the Brahman said, when am I going back to Godhead? And Narada Muni said, many births. And the Brahman got really angry. He said, I don't think he went to see Lord Rama. What was he doing? And Narada Muni said, what Lord Vishnu told Narada Muni to say, he was putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. And so the Brahman said, you rascal Narada Muni, you're not qualified. You didn't see Lord Vishnu. Get the soul out of here. And so Narada Muni went, and he saw the cobbler, and the cobbler asked the same question, and the cobbler asked, when he was told that you're going back to Godhead pretty much immediately, the cobbler said, what was Lord Narayan doing? And Narada Muni proceeded to explain to the cobbler that Lord Narayan was putting an elephant through the eye of a needle back and forth. And the cobbler said, he just shrugged his shoulders. He didn't say, wow, how could he do such a thing? You know, impossible. So Narada Muni said, how could you believe that? And then the cobbler, of course, said, look, he's able to put a whole tree, or many trees, into a seed. And that's inconceivable. You know, what the Lord has done is inconceivable. And actually, the more the scientists delve into matter, the more they're able to explore matter, the more inconceivable things they see. I mean, even the cell, one cell in the body is much more complex than the whole city of New York. Sometimes I talk to my mother, she tells me how nice New York is with all the theaters and everything. I'm sure there's no theaters inside the cell. So, one cell has more things going on and they can't even understand, all the RNA and DNA. And of course, they've done some genetic analysis so they can tell you if you're prone to this particular disease or you're going to have blue eyes or brown hair or something like that. I mean, that's just basic. But they don't understand how the information is transmitted from the DNA, the RNA, and how it actually manifests in terms of the whole body. I mean, it's inconceivable. It's actually inconceivable. It's incredibly complex how it came about. And obviously that indicates there's a designer, that's Krishna behind him, with an inconceivable brain. Because it couldn't take place, or it couldn't come about by chance, but it could come about by planning, but not by planning of these stupid scientists, because they can't figure out how it even works ex post facto, once it's there, what to speak of figuring out how to put it together. And so that means the brain is inconceivable of Krishna. Or even the brain of Brahma is inconceivable. What to speak of the brain of Krishna? So all these different things. And the more they explore the atom, I mean, just recently they talked about the God particle. You know, they have this atom smasher in Europe, collider, in which there are accelerating particles and they come up with this Higgs boson, they call it. Of course, they always want to name it after some guy. Why don't they just call it Krishna's boson? They call it the Higgs boson. So they say that's the God part. Of course, they were afraid once they discovered it, it would suck in the whole universe. Anyway, so many speculations like that. But it's just inconceivable. The more they go in to subatomic particles, the more things they discover, other particles, and it's just, huh? What's happening? Who created it all? The Big Bang. Who was, what happened before the Big Bang? What made the Big Bang? What was the reason for the big bang. I mean, anyway, there's so much inconceivable stuff going on, even in the material world. What to speak of the spiritual realm being inconceivable. Amazing stuff. So, anyway, so we as devotees, another thing about inconceivable is that the scientists, another point, probably because of the scientists think, you know, we're going to discover all these things about matter and then we're going to be able to cure diseases. But the interesting thing is the way Krishna arranges the material world, the more diseases they so-called cure, the more diseases come up. I mean, you have, like with the antibiotics, they try to cure all these different bacterial infections. Now they have superbugs. It's just like Hiranyakashipu trying to figure out, isn't it? I mean, trying to figure out how to live forever. So the scientists also are little Hiranyakashipus. Not quite on that level, not quite as potent or powerful. They're trying to figure out how to live forever. And then Krishna comes out with these amazing creatures. And he doesn't have to come out himself. He doesn't have to appear as half man, half lion to kill them. He just comes out with these bugs. These incredible, incredible bugs. Super bugs, they're called. It's like you have superheroes now that one of our devotees is very fond of watching. So these super bugs, and nothing can destroy them. And they just like take over people's bodies, and especially in hospitals. And Prabhupada actually said the more hospitals that people open, the more patients there'll be. And in spite of all that, everyone has to die. So, and then Prabhupada said, even if Prabhupada was, I heard another class, because I listen a lot to Prabhupada's classes when I'm doing my DD service. Prabhupada was saying, you know, even if they can prolong life, let's say they could, hypothetically, which they can't, because how long you live is dependent on your karma, if you're not a devotee. Okay. So Prabhupada said, hypothetically, let's say they prolong life. But what's the use of a long life? Prabhupada, that's what Bhagavatam says. Prabhupada was paraphrasing that verse from the Bhagavatam, Tarvakim Najivanti, that like the bellows of breathing and the trees, Prabhupada said, you know, there's trees like the California redwood trees somehow, or they live thousands of years in Vrindavan. You see these gnarled old trees. You go to this interesting place of Balabhacharya in Radhakund, and there's this tree that's 5,000 years old. And, of course, in Shamakund, they have the Pandava trees, which have all passed away. So you have these old trees. So what's the of course, living in Radhakund or Shamakund, there is such a use. That would be a good idea to be a tree there. But generally, I mean, what's the use of a long life? Isn't it without Krishna consciousness? And people don't understand that. People don't understand the importance of, even most devotees don't understand the importance of Krishna consciousness. You know, I got a letter yesterday from a disciple about talking about how parents don't understand how important it is to bring their children to Krishna consciousness. Even devotee parents, as we're talking about. That, you know, we're talking about support of the school, for example. People just don't get it. You know, you have this philosophy that, you know, life is temporary, material existence is suffering. But who actually accepts it? You know, don't become a mother or father or worshipful deity or a spiritual master unless you're capable of saving your dependents from the cycle of birth. And that's a heavy thing. So, you know, most people take Krishna consciousness as their religion, like churchianity, or we call Hare Krishna Templeianity. And, you know, and then, you know, it's so important. It's the essence of life. It is life itself. It's the meaning of life. There is no other meaning. I mean, sometimes I look at people's Facebook pages, who are devotees, of course. I don't look at anybody's. And it's just like so much stuff and not Krishna conscious. I mean, because this is so important. This is so important. And then and somehow other people wake up when they're getting ready to die. I don't know if we should wait that long until, you know, the it's time to die, and then, all right, Hare Krishna, Hare... Yeah, of course, Krishna is very merciful. You see, in many cases, like many Prabhupada's disciples who got ready, who were separated from the movement, came back to Vrindavan, and just at the final moment. That's true, but I don't think I'm going to depend on that happening. That, you know, I'm just going to, you know, hang out now, you know, go to the karaoke clubs, which I never liked anyway, and then drink and smoke, which I never liked, and then Krishna will take me back to Vrindavan. You know, the final, like, month, I just arrived in Vrindavan, everything is all glorious, and for Prabhu Krishna Maharaj, you know. It's so important, Krishna consciousness, yet we just don't think, and we don't come to see the deities. Of course, now you have the internet, so everybody can come to see the deities simultaneously, you know, whatever, on the internet. It is what? Well, we'll have a two-way television eventually. Jagadguru is going to arrange that. So we'll have a big screen in the back where we can have, like, little tiny squares where everybody will be. They have that in Skype, you know. You can have, like, 20 people. So, or people can email their pictures in and we can show them to the deities. When you do the deity greeting every morning, we can, instead of the... mirror, we can just show people picture. Anyway, so, but anyway, I understand snowing, you can't get here, that I understand. But the point is that we just don't, personally, we don't take it so seriously. We don't understand that children, it's so important. This is an opportunity that they can achieve eternal happiness. They don't need, you know, it's not the most important thing that they get their money-making position. Of course, that can happen. I mean, for example, if you see that in the case of these devotees who, they actually are PhDs and heads of their department at the university, and they were taken care of by their parents in a very Krishna-conscious way. So, anyway, so it's so important, this Krishna consciousness. Yet, do we actually have the faith? I mean, that's really the point here. So Prahlad Maharaj, he had complete faith. And he was completely dedicated and understood the importance of Krishna consciousness and was ready to tolerate so much in his execution of Krishna consciousness. He didn't, just because he was being tortured by his father, he didn't say, you know, Krishna, you know, you're not really God, because you wouldn't allow this to happen. But Krishna was arranging that for Prahlad Maharaj's deepening of his own Krishna consciousness. It's a very important point. And for our edification, too, because we're reading the story. But Krishna consciousness becomes deepened, like Queen Kunti prays, Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru, let these things happen again and again. So Krishna consciousness becomes deepened by different things that occur. And the process of devotional service. All right. On that happy note, all glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada.